All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. Today's November 24th, 2025. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. And for now, markets are quiet to start this abridged holiday week. After last week's sell-off, things have calmed down a little bit. What do we got? We've got futures are green this morning. Bitcoin had a good weekend. It's up a couple of grand, although it's already started to give up those gains. We've got gold and the bond market are quiet. For now, we look like we're okay. And, you know, we got the short week here. Markets are closed Thursday. We got a half day Friday. Usually a lot doesn't happen on a week like this. But then again, this is no ordinary week. We are sitting here at the tippy top of an everything bubble. And, well, we've got some headlines to that effect already this morning. There was a story over the weekend that went largely unnoticed about this AI bubble. And there was an absolute landmine hiding in this story. This leaked memo from OpenAI from Sam Altman to company employees. The information picked this one up. Economic Times has it. So what's going on here? Sam Altman appears to be worried about Google's progress here. A lot of language like they're falling behind, like they now need to catch up. And look, Google had Gemini 3's release last week. And most of the reviews that I've read of Gemini 3 were actually pretty good. Contrast that with GPT-5, which was a freaking joke after Sam Altman hyped the hell out of it. And then people got the thing and were like, this sucks. This is actually about the same as GPT-4, which was the same as 3 and 2 and 1. And also, of course, Gemini 3 is trained and run on Google's TPUs. They're not NVIDIA's GPUs, Google's homemade chips. So that's a risk, actually, for the AI bubble, even though it's a product that actually appears to be decent. The fact that it doesn't use NVIDIA's chips, what does that say about prospects for NVIDIA sales? But the real ticking time bomb in this memo was this language that Altman used, talking about rough vibes. Can we all agree to stop using the word vibe? We're done with this, right? It was stupid to begin with. And then the whole like vibe session, bad economic vibes things, let's just stop. Can we all just put that word down and come to something else? But he's also talking about economic headwinds for OpenAI. Wait, what? Economic headwinds for the company that just saw its valuation almost double overnight to $500 billion, despite $13 billion in revenue? Where did these economic headwinds come from? I thought we were going to cure cancer and invent new science and free education for all the children of the world. And then the really big one is that Altman warned that growth in revenue could slow to single digits in 2026. Guys, understand, single-digit revenue growth is a death sentence for a company like OpenAI. They will not survive that. All right, the company did $13 billion in revenue, and that's not even their actual revenue. That they call that the revenue run rate. They take their most recent month, and then they multiply that times 13, or times 12. I don't know where 13 came from. But that's not even the revenue they did in the last year. That's just their best month times 12. Now, keep in mind, they're valued at $500 billion. And also keep in mind that according to Microsoft's earnings in their most recent quarter, despite that impressive revenue, OpenAI lost $12.6 billion, which means OpenAI cannot survive without endless capital infusion. But that endless capital infusion is going to be impossible to come by if your revenue is only growing single digits after years and years of overhyping this company. This is terrible, and I'm amazed that mainstream press has not picked up on this yet. It's, again, we've got The Information, who has been excellent for the last few years, by the way, even though Jim Cramer just loves to bash The Information. That's probably the best giveaway that you should be reading it. Single-digit revenue growth for OpenAI, this bubble dies if that happens. And they're talking about this in 2026, which, oh, hey, that's only about a month and a week away. Yikes. Now, we've also got a slew of AI headlines this morning. Big tech's big debt wave is threatening the credit markets. We've got Mag 7 companies are borrowing money like they haven't done since 2021 when interest rates were nothing point nothing because they've already burned all their cash flow. They've burned their balance sheets, and now they're trying to borrow to keep the bubble inflated in the great game of CapEx chicken, where the first person who comes to their senses loses. We've also got insurance companies. This article in TechCrunch, insurance companies are asking regulators for permission to exclude any liabilities associated with AI. In other words, if your chatbot screws up and hurts somebody, we don't have to pay. Oh, it's the best technology in the world and it's going to change everything and put us all out of work. Then why are the insurance companies terrified of the fact that it hallucinates as often as it gets things right? Meanwhile, Alibaba is out with their new AI app, just showing that the space continues to become heavily commoditized as every tech company and their brother comes out with a new chatbot. Again, where's OpenAI's going to growth come from in a crowded market like that? Meanwhile, we've got the real economy. Anybody remember the real economy where, like, we put stuff on boats and trucks and trains and moved them around and people bought them and used them and, like, you know, stuff that we eat or wear or play with, not just, you know, electrons moving around on a screen in front of us. Well, the real economy, it still sucks. We've got a couple of bankruptcies over the weekend were announced. The first one we've got is American Signature. That's the parent company of Value City Furniture. They have filed Chapter 11 listing assets of $100 to $500 million and liabilities of $500 million to $1 billion. They've also issued a WARN notice at their company headquarters. They'll be winding down their HQ. We've also got another one that hasn't gone national yet, but I think this one may go national eventually. Hanson Muller is a grain elevator operator. They have filed bankruptcy. Now, there's very few details available. There's a lot of local news along the Midwest, along the Mississippi River Delta, talking about state insurance programs that are available for farmers who haven't been paid for their crops yet that have been basically sold to Hanson Muller, but Hanson Muller hasn't paying them. Apparently last month, for whatever reason, Hanson Muller stopped paying their farmers. Now they're saying potentially hundreds of millions of dollars may be owed to farmers throughout the U.S. over this one. I think this probably has a lot to do with the trade war and the Chinese boycott of soybeans and American ag products. But now you've got furniture, you've got grain elevators, you can add that to First Brands and Tricolor and all these other bankruptcies. The real economy is really struggling here. Those two stories adding to that one. Meanwhile, our government continues to impress with its ineptitude. We will get no inflation and no jobs report for the month of October. Those stories broke over the last few days. The government shutdown is over and they're just like, you know, we kind of like not telling people just how bad the job market and the inflation situation is. So maybe we just won't tell them at all anymore. And I guess the Federal Reserve is just expected to lower interest rates, even though we have no idea what's really going on in the economy because the instrumentation isn't working. Never mind all the headlines about companies going bankrupt. And if that isn't good enough, we've got the DOGE. Remember the Department of Government Efficiency? Remember all those headlines in January about all the spending we were going to cut and the ridiculous government programs and this silly program and this silly program? And we were all kind of getting excited. Maybe they're finally going to cut this stupid spending. Silly rabbit. Yeah, that's gone now. DOGE apparently doesn't exist. They have wound down operations. It's no longer a thing. They were never serious about cutting spending, guys. That's what the reality is. And I warned about this last fall. I warned that no matter what happened in the election, the result, it was going to smell different, but the result would be the same. They're both going to print and spend and borrow. Didn't matter who won. And unfortunately, we are being proven right here with that one. Oh, you still don't believe me? Let's talk about President Trump's plan to extend Obamacare subsidies. He's talking about putting this in. Instead of giving the money directly to the insurance companies, he's going to give helicopter money to people so they can give the money to the insurance companies. They're talking about limitations based on income. But at the end of the day, they're subsidizing these big handouts for the insurance companies. And how come nobody is saying this is a COVID program? This was a stimulus that we rolled out because of the virus, which is no longer a thing. Yeah, people still get it, but we're done with that stupid episode. Why are we even talking about extending stimulus measures that were rolled out during COVID? Why are we even having this stupid discussion right now? Not one person has said that. We don't need COVID stimulus anymore. I get it. It's unaffordable. I get it. Life got more expensive. I understand the struggle is real, but this is a handout from the government, the taxpayers, in the form of more borrowed and printed money directly to companies like United Health, which we are all like universally in agreement that we despise. Why are we doing this? Well, we're doing it. A couple other stories this morning. Novo's long shot at using Ozempic to treat Alzheimer's has failed. I normally don't cover the pharma industry because the whole thing gives me the creeps. But there's a pretty big sell-off in Novo stock because of that one this morning. So we'll talk about that. The United Kingdom is going to subsidize electric vehicles. At the same time, they're going to tax electric vehicles. And that strikes me as just a completely reasonable thing to do. Driving with your foot on the brake and the gas at the same time, and then we'll be surprised when something breaks in the car. Okay, good luck with that one, UK. By the way, we're going to hear some more ridiculousness from the UK this week. They're still struggling with that budget plan. We've got private equity firms continue to load up their holding companies with debt in order to pay themselves. This is how these parasites bleed the country dry by bankrupting their company. They are strip miners of industry. They continue to do it. And they're doing it at an accelerating rate here. And we've got another big SRT, or significant risk transfer, that obscure financial products that banks use to offload their risk onto the balance sheets of pensions and people's retirement plans. These people are so predictably treacherous. Oh, somebody should write a book about this stuff. Anyways, guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon to the head? Let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button. You new guys, hit the subscribe button right next to it so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the Melonheads, because we do this one every day with the exception of Thursday this week. We're not going to have a show Thursday for Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Enjoy time with family. And we're also not going to have a show on Friday morning, even though markets are open for a half day on Friday. I plan on nursing a hangover on Black Friday, so we're not going to have our live stream Thursday or Friday this week. And lastly, our Patreon Zoom that we do every Friday, we're going to move that one out to Sunday. I'll be posting emails and links to that effect, guys. But we got the holiday week and the schedule is a mess, so let's get through it, shall we? Right now, the S&P 500 is up by 50 points. Things are looking okay for the time being. 0.75% to the upside. The sell-off has taken a breather here. The Dow is up almost 200 points, 173 points in the green here. 0.38% to the upside, and the NASDAQ is up 262 points, 1.08% to the upside. Stocks are doing all right to start the week. We'll see if that one holds. Meanwhile, the DXY is a little bit lower here, but back above 100, 100.13 for the Dixie. That is lower by 5 basis points this morning. Keep an eye on the yen. Ever since that jawboning of the yen market last week by the finance ministry talking about intervening in FX markets, we've seen the bleeding out in the yen slow a little bit. We saw the growth in Japanese borrowing costs slow a little bit. That has contributed to the dollar getting a little bit stronger over the last couple of months here. Right now, that is stopping for the time being. Looking over at the bond market, we've got the 30-year yield is lower by 3 points and change this morning, 4.683 for the 30. The 10 years at 4.045, that's off by almost 2 points. The two-year yield is at 3.514, unchanged for the morning. And the 1 month at 3.948, down a fraction of a point here. Kind of quiet in the bond market this morning. And we're looking a little quiet in commodities as well. We've got a mixed bag for the shinies here. Spot gold is at $4,081. That's higher by 15 bucks or 0.37%. Meanwhile, February COMEX gold futures are at 4,114. That's actually down by a buck or about 0.03%. Spot silver, meanwhile, $50.24. That's up about 20 cents or 0.42%. Spot silver clinging to that $50 mark, but the COMEX futures for December have lost the 50 mark. We're at 49.86 for December silver. That's down by about a nickel or 0.1%, but I still like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, is lower by 0.83%. Platinum is higher by 1.3%. Palladium is higher by 1%. And crude oil is up about 0.6% here. $58.15 a barrel for January WTI futures. That's higher by about 34 cents. Looking over at Bitcoin, we're looking at daily candles right now. Bitcoin had a pretty good day yesterday. At one point yesterday, we traded as high as about $88,080. That's off of lows from Friday, where we went as low as, what were we, 80,500 on Friday. So an 8,000 intra-weekend swing for Bitcoin. Now we're headed lower again here, just sitting around 86,000 off our highs from the weekend. So we'll see. Is this Bitcoin sell-off continuing here. We had about $3.5 billion worth of outflows from Bitcoin ETFs last week. So I'm sorry, was that for the month of November? Okay, that's for November month to date, $3.5 billion of outflows. We'll see if that one continues here. Bitcoin has kind of led this whole tech sell-off. The move shows in Bitcoin first, and then the tech stocks follow. At least that's what we've seen for the last couple of weeks anyway. Now let's talk about these tech stocks, shall we? This one, this is a bomb. I cannot believe the main financial outlets don't have this memo story right now. This is in techstory.in. They're talking about this story that the information has behind paywall, obviously. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman issues internal warning to employees on Google competition in leaked memo. This story broke yesterday. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman has pulled back the curtain on some challenging times ahead for the artificial intelligence giant. A leaked internal memo reveals that the company is grappling with what Altman calls rough vibes and economic headwinds, a far cry from his usual public optimism about trillion-dollar ambitions. It's almost like this guy says one thing in public and then says something totally different when the cameras aren't running. In other words, he's a lying piece of shit, but I digress. The memo, which surfaced last month according to the information and was accessed by the Economic Times, paints a sobering picture. Altman reportedly warned employees that revenue growth could slow dramatically, potentially dropping to single digits by 2026. That is a stark reality check for a company currently valued at around $500 billion and expected to pull in approximately $13 billion in revenue. Understand, guys, the reason that valuation is so high, they're valued like 38 times their revenue right now. And even that, it's an inflated revenue statistic. They just take their best month times 12. That's assuming the growth that they've seen for the last few years is going to continue. And when I say growth, I'm talking about revenue growth, because the losses keep getting bigger and bigger too, which means OpenAI is endlessly dependent on raising more cash in order to survive. And if your revenue is growing single digits, you're going to have a hell of a time raising that cash to begin with. This company is in really bad financial shape. You contrast this with all the stupid things Sam Altman says on podcasts and the narcissistic outrage that he expresses when people question him on how are you going to meet your spending commitments. This company's in serious trouble here. The timing of this admission is particularly telling. It comes just days after Google launched Gemini 3 Pro, effectively reclaiming the performance crown in the AI race. Altman didn't mince words when discussing the competition, telling his team that Google has been doing excellent work recently in every aspect, with special praise for their pre-training capabilities. OpenAI is not going to make it, guys. I mean, they're asking the government for a bailout, and now we know why. Revenue growth slowing to single digits in 2026? Toast. This company is toast. Meanwhile, big tech continues to pile on the debt. Big tech's AI debt wave is threatening to swamp credit markets. An infinite supply of debt and a finite demand for it. A flood of debt sales from big tech risks overwhelming buyers and could weaken the credit market on both sides of the Atlantic. That's the warning from Wall Street and investors if the recent pace of mega bond offerings from the likes of Alphabet and Meta continues in 2026. These sales have capped a record year of global issuance, with tech firms expected to turn to debt for as much as $1.5 trillion with a T by 2028 to fund expansion in artificial intelligence and data centers. That could widen spreads across the whole market, Morgan Stanley argues. Bond buyers are starting to worry about being compensated for the risks of a bubble in the sector, given recent turmoil in tech stocks. Our biggest concern is that a flood of data center financing could cause supply indigestion, particularly in dollars, but with euro markets also absorbing part of the funding needs, said JP Morgan Chase strategist Matthew Bailey. In other words, the big tech companies may be seeking to borrow more money than is available out there to lend in order to keep this stupid bubble going. And well, interest rates are the price of money. And if the demand for money exceeds the supply, the price, interest rates rises. That makes the debt more expensive, which means unprofitable AI ventures get even less profitable. Oh, by the way, power is getting more expensive too, but I digress. Take a look at what's going on with the debt issuance in this chart. Big tech is raising record amounts of debt. Investment grade bonds sold by big tech companies in all currencies $239 billion worth of debt issued this year. That exceeds the prior high from 2021 of $193 billion. And keep in mind, guys, interest rates in 2021 were a whole hell of a lot lower than they are right now, too. They are desperately blowing into this bubble here. But it's not just big tech. Hedge fund Man Group noted that high yield firms are also issuing, including former Bitcoin miners. In other words, it's not just big tech. It's trash companies are also piling on the debt wave here. These companies' data center plans come with aggressive deadlines and a heavy reliance on the supporting lease contracts, it said in a blog post titled "Why Bond Investors Aren't Totally Buying the AI Hype." Now, keep in mind here, we're talking about Bitcoin miners, some of the like most bankruptcy-prone companies in history. Aggressive deadlines means they're full of shit. They're never going to get these things built in time. Heavily reliant on supporting lease contracts, meaning the only way they can make these things cash flow is if companies that don't have the money meet their obligations to rent these data centers, companies like CoreWeave. In other words, this is garbage, and that's why the bond market isn't buying this crap. A glut of supply of lower quality names in the AI space might be too much for markets to stomach, Man Group's John Larowies and Hugo Richardson wrote. The hyperscaler frenzy continues, but we remain watchful of future AI slop, they added. Now, this is crazy here, this one, because we're all familiar with the term AI slop and Facebook slop and work slop, but now they're using the word slop to describe the debt that is financing the AI build out. All right, we're getting awful sloppy here in this bubble. AI slop in the bond market, 2020's bingo. Meanwhile, the insurance company is saying, no thanks. Check this one out in TechCrunch this morning. AI is too risky to insure, say people whose job is insuring risk. What happens when the software that everyone's racing to adopt becomes too risky for anyone to insure? According to a report from the Financial Times, we're about to find out. Major insurers, including AIG, Great American, and WR Berkley, are asking U.S. regulators for permission to exclude AI-related liabilities from corporate policies. One underwriter describes the AI model's outputs to the Financial Times as too much of a black box. The industry has good reason to be spooked, the story reminds us. Google's AI Overview falsely accused a solar company of legal troubles, triggering a $110 million lawsuit back in March. Air Canada last year got stuck honoring a discount its chatbot invented. And fraudsters last year used digitally cloned versions of senior executives to steal $25 million from London-based design engineering firm Arup during a video call that seemed entirely real. What really terrifies insurers isn't one massive payout. It's the systemic risk of thousands of simultaneous claims when a widely used AI model steps in it. As one an Aon executive put it, insurers can handle a $400 million loss to one company. What they can't handle is an agentic AI mishap that triggers 10,000 losses all at once. So what they're saying here, guys, is this: these AI products are so bad and they make so many mistakes that the insurance companies are trying to tell companies, we will not guarantee payments if your AI screws up and hurts somebody or costs you money. And they're asking regulators to codify that in policy. But, you know, it's the best technology ever, right? Meanwhile, Alibaba's main AI app debuts strongly in effort to rival ChatGPT. Now, put this in the context of OpenAI and their single-digit revenue growth next year that they're worried about. This is a heavily commoditized space. We don't need to spend too much time. They got, 10 million users in the first week that this new Alibaba app was out there. There's all this AI arms race crap being thrown around with the Chinese here. But Alibaba stock's having a pretty good morning off of this news here, up 4.5%, $159.88 for U.S.-listed ADRs in Alibaba. Meanwhile, in the real world, the economy sucks. We've got this one in Furniture Today, not a news source I typically go to. American Signature files for Chapter 11 and issues WARN notice. Top 100 retailer American Signature, Inc. filed for Chapter 11 protection in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware on November 22nd and has begun issuing WARN notifications to employees, Furniture Today has learned. And by the way, a WARN notice, that means you're about to get laid off when you get one of those. In the voluntary filing, the Columbus, Ohio-based retailer, which owns and operates American Signature Furniture and Value City Furniture, reported estimated assets of $100 million to $500 million versus estimated liabilities of $500 million to $1 billion to an estimated 1,000 to 5,000 creditors. They owe a lot of people a lot of money. As part of the proceedings, ASI expects to enter into a stalking horse asset purchase agreement with ASI Purchaser LLC, under which, subject to court approval, ASI Purchaser will acquire substantially all of the company's assets and assume certain related liabilities. A stalking horse bidder is somebody who basically puts a floor under prices. They're going to liquidate the company, auction everything off. Whatever doesn't sell, ASI will buy it at a preset price. Let's see. The company also, a copy of a November 21st WARN notification obtained by Furniture Today noted that the retailer will be closing its offices at 4300 East 5th Avenue in Columbus, Ohio, due to significant decline in sales, resulting liquidity challenges, and the company's anticipated Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing. So, look, when a furniture company goes bankrupt, you can't help but look at the housing market, right? We've seen some pretty staggering statistics recently in housing. We've had the average age of a first-time home buyer is now 40 years old. We've got 53% of home values have declined. By the way, my friend Melody Wright did an excellent interview with Adam Taggart over at Thoughtful Money over the weekend. I highly recommend that. The problems in the housing market are no secret here. And if the housing market sucks, then people don't need to buy furniture, do they? Because they're not buying that new house and they don't have rooms that they need to fill in it. And so American Signature is going bankrupt and a lot of debt holders are going to lose money, guys. You know, you can say what you want about AI and data centers. The real world economy is in bad shape. And we got this one as well in NPR News. All right, keep an eye out for this one. I can only find this story in local news. My moderator, Mish, found this one. Great catch, Mish. This is being told from the Minnesota perspective. There's similar articles from Ohio right now, but Minnesota's grain indemnity fund faces major test with large grain elevator failure. They're talking about these state insurance programs that the farmers pay a small fee into, where if for whatever reason the grain elevators don't pay the farmers, there's the state indemnity fund that will pay the farmers in their place. But these funds are being taxed, and it's not just in Minnesota. Hanson Muller Company, which has grain elevator operations in Minnesota, has filed for bankruptcy. They have grain elevator operations in many states, by the way. The Omaha, Nebraska-based company is expected to owe hundreds of millions of dollars to farmers and creditors nationwide. In its bankruptcy proceedings, Hanson Muller Company cited Wayzata-based Cargill as one of its largest creditors. It owes the Minnesota company over $2.5 million. Grain elevators are crucial hubs for farmers who use them to sell or store their grain. So a lot of farmers have not been paid by Hanson Muller. Now Hanson Muller has declared bankruptcy. A lot of these state insurance funds are on the hook to pay those farmers now. We don't know if those state funds will have enough money to pay them. I don't know if this is related to the Chinese boycott of American soybeans. It has to be related to that. Otherwise, why would the grain elevators be in trouble? But once again here, guys, the real economy continues to struggle. This time, it's affecting agriculture. But don't worry, we have no idea how bad it is. The Bureau of Labor Statistics cancels October inflation report due to government shutdown. The government shutdown is over. Why are we canceling future reports now? This is stupid, but there it is. The Bureau of Labor Statistics announced on Friday that it would not produce its highly anticipated monthly inflation report for October, the CPI, after being unable to collect key data during the government shutdown. The BLS said it would not release an update to the Consumer Price Index for October because it was unable to retroactively obtain information that would have been collected during the record long lapse in funding. Almost all of the agency staff was furloughed during the shutdown, which lasted 43 days between October 1st and November 12th, preventing the BLS from collecting price data last month. The agency also canceled the October jobs report Wednesday because of its inability to collect data from households during the shutdown. So no jobs data and no inflation data. It's okay. Those are only the two most important macroeconomic statistics that the government gathers. The cancellation of the data means the Federal Reserve will not have any new major federal employment or inflation data to consider before its final interest rate policy meeting of the year on December 9th and 10th. And right now, the market is saying at that meeting where the Fed will have no additional data available, there's still a 77.7% likelihood that the Fed is going to cut rates by 25 basis points at that December meeting. That is up from about 30% in the middle of last week. That sell-off in tech and the parade of Fed jawboning on Friday almost doubled those odds, but did very little to reverse the direction of stocks. Stocks did, they closed modestly negative on Friday. They're a little bit positive this morning. But it looks like that Fed cut is going to happen, even though all the reasons that the Fed typically uses to cut rates, well, we don't have those because the government's not going to provide that information. That doesn't exist. This story is just great. Doge reportedly was quietly disbanded ahead of schedule. We're not even pretending to care about cutting spending anymore. That's adorable. There's Elon. Yep, sorry. While his kid, you know, goes digging for gold there. Pick me a winner, Junior. The Department of Government Efficiency has apparently been dissolved with 8 months still remaining on its contract, ending a drawn-out campaign of invading federal agencies and firing thousands of federal workers. That doesn't exist, Office of Personnel Management Director Scott Cooper told Reuters this month when asked about DOJ's status, adding that it was no longer a centralized entity. The statement confirmed longstanding suspicions that DOJ, created by an executive order that Donald Trump signed on his first day, was on its way out. The tech billionaire Elon Musk and the former Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy were tapped to lead the effort and were expected to drive large-scale structural reform through the 24th of July, 2026. Yeah, what was it, about $9 billion, I think, in total savings? I mean, the government sneezes $9 billion, and now they're done. They're disbanding it. All of that silly exercise. Guys, they were never going to cut spending. It was never going to happen. There's just... This is why I say there's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming. After all that stupid dog and pony show, we got $9 billion of measly savings from that. And of course, that is all gone now. We're already talking about this. Look at this one. Trump to push new Republican plan on Obamacare subsidies. All right. I just want to throw it out there. Republicans are not supposed to subsidize Obamacare. I'm pretty sure subsidizing Obamacare means you're not Republican anymore. Isn't that how that works? And look, I'm not trying to be like all team sport politics here. It's just Obamacare was one of the biggest expansions of the welfare state and of government overreach in history. And now Republicans are like, yeah, let's subsidize that after we get rid of DOGE. What the hell is going on here? President Trump, as soon as this week, is due to outline a new initiative that calls for a short-term extension of Affordable Care Act subsidies in exchange for new eligibility limits and other changes. There's nothing more long-term than a short-term government program, by the way. What we're hearing, Trump plans to propose a framework that would address spiking premiums by extending for 2 years the enhanced ACA tax credits, which are due to expire at the end of the year, according to sources familiar speaking on anonymity. By the way, those enhanced tax credits, those were COVID stimulus programs. Why are we even talking about doing this? I get it. Insurance has gotten more expensive, but we're not doing COVID stimulus anymore because it caused inflation and made life unaffordable for everybody. Helicopter money doesn't solve affordability problems. I thought we learned this by now. I thought we were done with this stupidity. It would put an income limit on who's eligible for the tax credits and require recipients to make a minimum premium payment, eliminating $0 premium plans that Republicans say fuel fraud. The plan also would encourage people to buy lower premium options on the ACA exchange. For individuals who downgrade their coverage, the difference in cost would be distributed to a health savings account provided with taxpayer dollars. This looks an awful lot like single payer. I'm just saying, I bet Bernie Sanders just loves this idea. Good God. 2020's bingo. Meanwhile, we got this one going on today. Let's not spend too much time on this. I don't like covering the pharma industry, but Novo Nordisk Ozempic pill fails in long shot Alzheimer's effort. Look, the GLP-1s or Ozempic, the fat burning shots that they had, they tried to use this as a cure for Alzheimer's. They did a study. They found no change in their patients because of Alzheimer's. So they're abandoning their plans here. Novo stock down big here, 7.8% lower after the opening bell has rung, $43.85 for Novo. This stock having a rough year, off 44% year to date, adding to those losses this morning. Meanwhile, the circus in the UK. How about this headline? UK to extend EV subsidies to blunt tax increase in budget. What do you do when you have a new tax on electric vehicles that you're worried might hurt the electric vehicle market, Well, you subsidize electric vehicles. That's what you do. That makes perfect sense to a big government type, right? Both taxing and subsidizing the same freaking product at the same freaking time. Yep, that's what we're doing here in the UK, apparently. The UK government will increase subsidies for electric vehicles as it seeks to mitigate a tax rise that's expected to target the cars at next week's budget. Chancellor of the Exchequer Rachel Reeves plans to announce £1.3 billion, or about $1.7 billion, of further funding for electric vehicle grants that bring down the upfront cost of buying an EV by thousands of pounds, a government spokesperson said. Reeves is also expected to announce a new per-mile tax on electric vehicle usage. The Treasury has been keen to tax EVs after becoming concerned that the transition away from petrol cars will lose the government billions of pounds in revenue and fuel duties. All right, so in order to speed up electric vehicle adoption, we're going to put a tax on gasoline. And then, okay, well, the tax, it's a per-mile tax. And then they're like, oh, but now we're worried all the money we were going to make from the gasoline taxes might go away if the desired outcome from those taxes in the first place happens, people transition to EVs. So here's what we do. We're going to tax the mileage on the EVs. Oh, but wait, that might discourage people from buying the EVs, which was the whole goal of the fuel taxes and to begin with. So I know now we're going to subsidize those same EVs that we're taxing because we're worried about the taxes that we put on fuel might be going away. All right, they're driving with their foot on the gas and the brake at the same time. And then when the car breaks down, they're going to be like, how could this happen? We were totally unprepared for this. We had no way of predicting this was going to happen. Stupidity. Stupidity has gone mainstream. It is now the default setting of our leadership. Meanwhile, private equity firms flood junk debt market to pay themselves. Pay attention to this one, guys. This is going to become... maybe not this cycle or next cycle, but this is going to become a campaign issue at some point. These private equity firms are parasites, vultures, locusts, leeches, whatever you want to call it. They are strip mining American businesses, getting rich while destroying companies and destroying jobs. And they're doing it at a rate we have never seen before. Private equity firms struggling to find buyers for their investments are turning to an old playbook like never before. Financial sponsors are extracting cash from their portfolio companies by raising debt to fund payouts to themselves and their investors at an unprecedented clip. Such dividend loans have hit $28.7 billion so far this year, putting them on track to surpass 2021's record of $28.8 billion, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. Understand, guys, there are now more private equity funds in the United States than there are McDonald's franchises. These guys are everywhere and they do nothing. They don't add any value to anything. All they do is extract. All they do is destroy and take. And when they're talking about here is their companies that they bought, they overpaid for them and they can't sell these companies at a profit in order to generate real profits for their investors. So what they're doing is they're loading up these companies with debt. When they borrow money, it's the companies that get stuck with the debt. Then they take all that money that they borrowed and they pay themselves. And then when they're done, the company goes bankrupt. They file for bankruptcy. The people who lent them the money lose everything. They lay off the workers and the company ceases to exist. This is how these people just suck the lifeblood out of the economy. Their efforts come as the private equity machine hits snarls at nearly every turn. Attractive takeover targets are sparse, and it's harder to cash out old investments and deliver the returns once promised to pension managers, foundations, and wealthy individuals. To quell impatient investors, buyout shops are increasingly layering extra borrowing on their companies and funneling the proceeds of debt sales to their stockholders instead. And by the way, the stockholders always includes themselves. The general partners collect a very handsome fee for the service. All the stars are aligned for dividend recaps. That's what you call it, a dividend recapitalization, when you buy a company and then you borrow a whole bunch of money, leaving that company you bought with the debt. And then the money you borrowed, you just give to yourself and you walk away. That's called a dividend recapitalization because it sounds a lot better than sucking the life out of the company you just bought. Rates are coming down. Spreads are tight. The market is open. Yet the IPO market and mergers and acquisitions are still subdued, said Bill Zox, a portfolio manager at Brandywine Global Investment Management. Investors want distributions and dividend recaps can buy PE firms more time to wait for a better environment for exits. That better environment for exits is not coming. These firms are just strip mining these companies while they wait. And the last one of the day, ING closes two SRTs tied to 10.5 billion euros in corporate loans. And look, the banks are kind of doing the same thing the private equity firms are doing. They made a lot of risky loans, and now they're taking the risk and they're parking that risk in your retirement account. And they're calling it a significant risk transfer, an SRT. Sometimes they call it a synthetic risk transfer. Same thing. They're just getting the risk off their books and putting it on your retirement. ING has completed two significant risk transfers linked to 10.5 billion euros, or about $12.1 billion, worth of corporate loans, boosting its capital buffer. The SRTs are expected to lift the lender's CET1 ratio by 0.14 percentage points, it said in a statement on Monday. Bloomberg News reported in June that ING was in talks with investors about two separate SRTs tied to about 5 billion euros each. So the way this works, guys, is an SRT, you get it like a pension fund, for example, sets aside a large amount of money in an escrow tank that the bank controls, an escrow account. And then what happens is the bank pays that pension fund a regular premium, almost like an insurance fund, right? Insurance plan. They pay that pension fund a yield every month, a couple of percent, in exchange for parking all that money. Now, if that risky loan goes bad, the bank keeps all that pension money that was put in escrow, and the pension gets wiped out. So what the pension fund is really doing here is they're taking a big risk in order to chase the yield that the bank is paying in the form of that monthly premium. Now, the bank loves to do this because the bank can make risky loans and then offload that risk to the pension fund. It costs them a couple of percent, but then they can take that money, go loan it out again. Their capital ratio looks a lot better because the risk is being transferred to the pension fund. ING last month increased its capital ratio target to 13% in a move that effectively reduced how much money is available for investor payouts as it narrowed the gap between the goal and the actual level, which was 13.4%. SRTs are instruments that enable banks to insure loans against default by selling credit-linked notes to pension, sovereign wealth, and hedge funds, freeing up resources they would otherwise use to meet regulatory requirements. Several European banks have been turning to the risk management tool to free up capital. This is something else that they'll be doing congressional hearings about and complaining about in a couple of years when all these things start going bad and pensions are holding the bags. They'll be saying, how could they let this happen? Well, now is the time to have that conversation while they are letting this happen, not after it goes bad. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. BTB. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. He says, have a cup of tea on me, Jack. How about a cup of Joe? I need my hot drinks to be just a little bit darker. We're gonna make it a cup of coffee, but I thank you very much for the generosity, Mr. BTB. Jose Orozco, what's going on, brother? He says, I knew Jack before he was a Twitter rando. That is correct. Jose Orozco, I met Jose in Texas years ago. He walked up to me. He introduced me to his grandmother. I hope Abuela's doing well, by the way. And he gave me a bag of Buc-ee's corn nuggets, which I had never had before. I grew up in the Northeast. We don't have Buc-ee's up here. Oh, my God, they were freaking delicious. And ever since then, Jose Orozco has been the keeper of the Buc-ee's corn nuggets in my book. Thank you, Jose, for supporting the channel, sir. Good to hear from you. T.A. Chapman says, retire the word vibes 2020's bingo card, like and sub. No more vibes. Can we all agree it's stupid? It never really sounded that good at all. And like, oh, we trotted out some edgy hipster to say the reason why everybody thinks the economy sucks is because their vibes are off. Like, okay, let's just get your chakras in a row, get a new crystal necklace, and all of a sudden your chi will be centered and the economy will be great. Yes, your vibes was the problem. No. The economy sucked all along, and even all these edgy hipsters, now that there's a Republican in the White House, now they're willing to admit we've been in a recession since 2022. Isn't it funny how that works? Isn't it great? Stupid politics. Hey, thanks a lot, T.A. Chapman, for supporting the channel, for being a melonhead for 17 months. What's going on, my buddy Travis? Real Estate Mindset. Can we get a 399 to anyone? Jack 2028. I don't know what this call for a 399 is, but thank you so much, Travis, for supporting the channel. No politics. Sorry, brother. I was just too much of a degenerate in my youth. That is not happening, brother. But I thank you for supporting the channel. Check out Real Estate Mindset. He is the most bonkers man in real estate YouTube. Except no substitutes. The Feral Grandma is a frightening name, by the way. Jack 2028. Hail to the no. To the no. Definitely not, guys. Sorry. Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of ex-girlfriends that would just love to come out of the woodwork with that one. Sorry, guys. I am not fit for politics. Oh, my God. Hell no. Armando Reyes says DJT and the MAGA movement will be known as the greatest rug pull in American history. DJT will go down as the bribery king. Look, I don't know how history will remember him, to be honest with you. I mean, currently history has a lot to say about the guy. He's done some things right. He's done some things wrong. But he didn't cut spending. That is for damn sure. And honestly, the most important thing that he needed to do when he got elected was cut spending. Because if we're really going to solve the affordability crisis, guys, which, you know, everybody's now, affordability is the buzzword. It's the new vibes, affordability. If we're really going to solve that, we need to do what nobody wants to admit we need to do. We got to cut the damn government spending. That is the ultimate source of the inflation. The government is spending so much money that they're borrowing it all from the bond market. And every time the bond market breaks down under that stress, the Federal Reserve prints trillions of dollars in order to keep it inflated. That trillions of dollars causes inflation. At the end of the day, it is the government spending that is causing the damn inflation. And we're all just like, oh, we need a 50-year mortgage and we need an expanded subsidy and we need to create a new acronym for this. Cut the freaking spending. But Doge is gone. So nope. Ain't happening today, guys. There just ain't enough of this for what's coming. Thank you very much, Armando, for supporting the channel, sir. First, last, with a whole bunch of characters after that, says, movie quote, all the dumb money is in. I don't know what movie that is, all the dumb money is in. It sounds Big Short-ish, but I don't. Is that maybe that's a quote from The Dumb Money, the movie, which wasn't bad, by the way. But yeah, the dumb money is in, guys. Who's left to buy here? We've got like 3x levered single stock ETFs, and people are buying those on margin, right? Margin debt is at all-time highs. Levered single stock ETFs is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in history. It's just a product that is it's a fee shop. That's all that is. The people who create the ETFs are making money off of investors who don't know how to do math and don't understand time decay in these products. Who's left to buy when the Shine Boy has already bought it? Yep, good. Good thought, First Les. Thank you for supporting the channel. Armando's back again, says Trump won't be creating 3 million jobs in a year, nor will millions get deported. The deportations, that has happened. You can see that showing up in statistics, and you can see that behind the tricolor thing. But the 3 million jobs created in a year, I agree, that ain't happening. Republicans will be losing midterms. The incumbent party always loses the midterms. The question is by how much. I think that's pretty much a given here. Right now, I think they're on pace to get their clock cleaned because President Trump is attaching himself at the hip to crypto and AI, which by next November will be looking at catastrophic losses. And so, yeah, I agree. I think they will lose in the midterms here. Look, the jobs created, I think the idea behind the tariffs, the goal of the trade war to reshore manufacturing is the right one. And I think if we were to stick with this, eventually that would happen, but the pain gets here first. And we are just a society of immature children with no discipline. We won't survive that pain. We'll blink, we'll give up, we'll quit, we'll print more money, and we'll go right back to the problems that we had before. So I agree, the 3 million jobs probably ain't coming. We're just not, we don't deserve them. Thank you, Armando. Real Estate Mindset says, 3i Atlas, Project Bluebeam, anything to worry about? Never heard of any of these, Travis. I suspect, just based on the name, that we're going to need one of these. Project Bluebeam, is that the whole thing about like the directed energy weapons from space caused the fires and that the stuff that was blue didn't burn in Maui? Is that where that came from? Because everybody knows fire hates the color blue. It's science. Some of this stuff gets a little kooky. Listen, I get down with a good conspiracy theory as much as the next guy. But the whole lasers from space that burn everything but the blue stuff. Oh, but Oprah's house was blue. Nah, come on. Let's tone it down a little, guys. Thanks, Travis. Love you, brother. Armando Reyes again says, we had no money to pay the government, military, welfare, and God knows what else. But now we do. There is no Social Security. We're cooked. 45D chess. Look, most of the government, you know, all these, entitlement programs, they're just unfunded liabilities. They're all dependent on future cash flows from taxpayers that haven't even been born yet. And oh, by the way, those taxpayers probably won't be born because people can't afford to have kids, which means fewer children, which means fewer people becoming adults in 18 years, which means fewer taxpayers aging into the economy. It's only a matter of time. But, you know, we're not going to solve that problem today, Armando. I don't know what to tell you, brother. Thank you for supporting the channel, though. Jose's back again, says last Super Chat. It's special to tune in to live Central Standard Time. And my work schedule has me watching later. Interaction is special. Thank you, Jose. It is good to see you again, brother. It's good to see you back on the live. And yeah, hey, guys, work schedules are what they are. Some people can't make the live shows. No big deal. Shout out to all my people who are watching on the recording as well. Chedka. What's going on, Chedka? He says, your thoughts on nickel. Is that nickel like the macro edge guys and the joke about buying bags of nickels as a hedge against inflation, or nickel the metal? Wasn't nickel the one that that Chinese guy Big Shot tried to corner the market and caused a whole big mess a few years ago? I can tell you, is it nickel? No, that's zinc. Zinc is what's in pennies, and they're not making pennies anymore. Look, the industrial metals, with what's going on with the Chinese, it's hard to guess with nickel because, nickel, zinc, lead, a lot of these industrial metals, the Chinese control a lot of the demand, as well as the Chinese are subsidizing excess supply via their mines. You've got economic slowdown around the world, but at the same time, we want to subsidize production here in the States. The Chinese are trying to subsidize production that they no longer need. So it's hard to play these industrial metals in this situation here because it's not being driven by free market mechanics. It's being driven by governments who are opposed to each other, each trying to subsidize their own loss-making industries. And I don't want to play on that field. So that's pretty much my take on nickel. It's all dependent on bureaucrats and their whims. I can't handicap that. I can't anticipate that or chart that, so I don't even try. Thank you very much, Jenka, for supporting the channel. Nashville Pasta Man says, I suspect history will teach us the government spending would have expedited a severe economic collapse. Trump chose to be an all-time can kicker. Yeah, if it didn't expedite it, I'm going to say the government spending, it doesn't expedite it, Pasta Man. I think it delays it, actually. But I do think it makes the eventual collapse much worse. So can you call that expediting? Maybe accelerated, maybe. But I do think the government spending right now, it's sugar high economics. And when you start to come down from the sugar high, isn't the obvious solution to stuff your face with more freaking sugar and just hope for the best? Isn't that what a reasonable person would do? Or do you just say like, all right, I stuffed my face a few hours ago. I knew this was coming. Let's just lay down and take the pain that's coming. And let's try again tomorrow. I think that's the right course of action. But I agree, Trump, he had his opportunity to be a cutter of spending, and he has failed in that pursuit. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Travis says, I got last Super Chat, LFG. I see a couple of people trying to get this last one going. I see what you're doing there, Travis. Thank you, brother. Bonkers, S-O-B-U. Not the last, says Armando. Are we doing this? Still not the last, says Pasta Man. But I beg to differ, says Armando. Don't judge me. This show's never going to end. Is this like a flywheel for the live show? I don't know. I appreciate this, guys. Troy Rhodes says, first in the race to last. Travis is back again. Armando says, bring it. All right, guys, I'm going to hit the music, and you're going to have like 20 seconds to sneak those in. So if you want to do it now. I just want to say thank you so much, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads. Thank you so much for all the first, last, middle, last, and last that were in there. Here we go. There's another one. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out, guys, for the algorithm. Thank you so much. Thank you also, guys, for all the super chats. Thank you to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Reminder, guys, no show Thursday, no show Friday, and we're doing Zoom on Sunday for the members. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys, everybody. And there you are, Armando. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.